The Australian Grand Prix will be back on track next year after missing, of course, 2020 and this year due to COVID. So April 10 is the race date locked in for 2022. And I tell you, it can't come quick enough for the man who had the job of informing the crowds back in 2020 that it was cancelled. And that was at the very last minute. I'm pleased to say Andrew Westacott, the CEO of the Australian Grand Prix Corp, is on the line. Andrew, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Matt, g'day. It's nice to chat.
Always great to chat to you. And I guess you must be feeling pretty happy at the moment. After a tough couple of years, we've finally got a date now for the return of the Australian Grand Prix. Have you got April 10 circled, highlighted, cut and pasted and put on walls around the office there?
Too right I have. We're even cancelling birthdays on the 10th of April because we'll be hosting massive crowds at Albert Park. And for a couple of years of cancelling MotoGP and F1 events, it's nice to have certainty. And, you know, April is a date that gives us really good certainty. And the way society's heading here in Australia and borders and so on, you know, I'm more excited than I have been with the other dates because they've all been a slog, Matt, but this is one it'll still have its challenges. Don't worry about that. But it's a date that is well and truly inked in on that calendar.
You just mentioned one thing there, Westy, and we've got quite a few issues to go through here. So you just mentioned crowds, looking forward to getting crowds back. Now, we don't know what's going to happen in between now and April next year, but would you be hoping this far out in the way that the vaccinations, et cetera, is going and the country starting to open up that you could go back to maximum?
Yeah, we're, you know, in COVID days, as motorsport in New South Wales knows, you plan on 50 to 100, and that's 50 to 100. We're looking and planning more for 50,000 to 100,000. And, you know, conservatively, it's a massive park, Albert Park. There's 10.5 kilometres of track frontage on both sides. It's 170 hectares in size. And we really do think on a big day and a normal day, you get 100,000. And that it's sensible to plan for those massive numbers because getting to levels of, you know, 90-plus vaccination, maybe rapid antigen tests, lots of other safeguards, it's the right thing to do. And it follows in the footsteps of massive races in Silverstone, Zandvoort, Circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas this week is sold out. And that's proof of what you can do in societies when they put their mind to it.
Have you got any thoughts around how you, as an organisation, and I guess hand in glove with the Victorian government, will handle or need to handle the vaccination scenario, not just for spectators, but for those coming and working here, drivers, teams, volunteers, the lot?
Yeah, it's something that we're getting our mind around, and clearly as a government organisation, the Australian Grand Prix Corporation will fall in line with the Victorian government, and at the moment the situation down here is if you're an authorised worker in particular industries, and I'd expect that we'll fall under that, is that it's mandated that vaccination is 100% requirement. Now, whether that changes in April, 5.5 months down the track, will remain to be seen, but the evidence suggests that it's the safest way to go anyway. So it's a good measure to be safe in a very, very large mass gathering environment.
You and I both remember very well that Friday morning of 2020 and the cancellation, and we'll touch on that more in just a sec, Andrew. But I remember, first and foremost, the images of the crowds and the spectators standing out at the gate. It would have broken your heart to see that because you're so invested in them. They're standing there with their tickets and they had to be turned away. Now, I think in hindsight, those spectators who were angry that day could understand what was really going on. What will you be able to do for the spectators next year to say thank you?
Yeah, it's an interesting point you raise, Matt, because not only were they left at the gate, but just outside your Channel 10 studios was a gathering of the world's media for the cancellation of the first major event that had occurred. And then it led to Bahrain being cancelled and Vietnam and then on and on and on and on and on. Look, I really felt for the fans and still do out the front gate and the images I see. I want to try and track down the two young boys who are in their Ferrari outfits giving me the thumbs down and yelling expletives because at the time, you know, they'd probably travelled long distances. They were clearly pass holders that had spent a lot of money on great tickets. And, you know, it wasn't in our control to be able to make a decision at any particular point in time. It came down to dialogue with Formula One in London, Jean Todt and the FIA. Chase Carey was on a plane. The teams were in hotels. And in fact, a couple of the drivers had already flown off. Such was their position. So we want to find the fans. We want to get them back to Melbourne. And with redesign changes of the circuit, which we'll talk about, and just lots of other things, we do plan to welcome them back in a big way.
At what stage was that event in 2020 cancelled? Because like you say, that was the first major event to have the carpet, the rug pulled from under it because of COVID-19. So we all didn't really know how to play this one. At 8:30, you and I were on the phone in the morning and you were telling me that it was going ahead. And then an hour or so later, it was completely gone. It must have been an extraordinary 24 hours for you.
Yeah, it was. And I can remember talking to my chairman, Paul Little, at about 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning. We'd both left the circuit. We'd been talking to, you know, Ross Brawn, who from Formula One was in Melbourne, and he was speaking to the teams and he was speaking to London. And, you know, it was on, and then it was wavering, and then it was off, and it was on. And so there weren't any games being played about decisions, because the final decisions was around sort of, you know, 8:30, 9:30, and when it was all cemented. Now, the fact that a couple of drivers had got on planes and returned back to the US, or sorry, to Europe, was, you know, not actually known to us until after the event. And it just really did play out in a very, very high-powered fashion, with a lot of conversations going on and a lot of involvement with politics and primarily also health authorities, and everyone was spread around the country.
Mm. Sebastian Vettel and Kimi Raikkonen were the drivers that decided to get out. I think they were on a 6 o'clock plane, and we started to get word of that around the paddock. Can I tell you one thing, Westy? On that morning, with everything going on, you managed to do something that not a lot of people in Australia and Australian motorsport have done. You beat Mark Webber. Because you gave me a call as head of sport at 10 at the time. You gave me a call to tell me that it was off, that it was officially off, and that I could go on TV and say that. And then I reckon about 2 minutes later, Mark called me, who was working with us at the time. He said, mate, it's off. And I said, I know, I've just found out. So there you go. You've got one up on the great M. Webber. But extraordinary time. Now, we can look forward now. That's in the past. It's actually also been captured in Drive to Survive, the Formula One Netflix documentary as well. You mentioned track changes, and resurfacing is going to head our way. So when we do get back, when the world comes back to Albert Park, it's going to look bigger, brighter and better than before.
Yeah, it sure is. You know, one of the criticisms that they've had for a long period of time, and also the stats show it, Matt, is that you come down to Australia and there was a lack of overtaking. The circuit just wasn't conducive to overtaking with the dynamics of the car, the aerodynamics of the current cars and so on. And we needed to resurface. The track had never been resurfaced in 25 years. It was really getting old and tired. It was bad enough riding a push bike around it, let alone a suburban car. But if you're driving 340 kilometres an hour down the main straight, it was not a good ride. And so what we set our minds to doing was making some design changes and a combination of everything from widening of corners to adjusting of camber to also really adjusting one major turn at old turn 13 and removing some chicane around Lakeside. And this is all designed along with pit lane widening and a new, more abrasive asphalt to introduce more options for tyre strategy, higher degradation, wider pit lane gives higher speed limit in pit lane, widening of turns gives more opportunities for apex and entry and exit points and so on, and hopefully better racing along with 2022 spec cars. So we got a lot of input from everyone, past world champions, past drivers, current drivers, Michael Massey from the FIA, Herman Tilke, Mark Scaife, and throw in a little bit of other engineering input, then you get hopefully a really, really good result.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. It's never hard to find a storyline going into an Australian Grand Prix, but think about it. The last time Daniel Ricciardo raced at that circuit in 2019, he was in the Renault colours. It was a huge storyline, of course, and it went pear-shaped for him off the start line. He'll come back next year as a McLaren driver who's won the Italian Grand Prix along the way, and the smile's even bigger. So there's a good storyline to follow with Dan, but also possibly a storyline to follow with Oscar Piastri. Now, I've been keeping my listeners across what's been happening with Oscar's year. If he goes on to win Formula F2, he should be in a Formula One seat next year, and he could line up at the Australian Grand Prix.
Yeah, look, isn't it amazing? You mentioned Daniel in the Renault in 2019. It actually means that whilst we had the cancellation in 2020, it's been 3 years since the Formula One cars went around in a Grand Prix, normally 58 laps and about 305 kilometres. And so it's been a long time between drinks for that. And Oscar Piastri, having won Formula 3 last year and leading young Chinese driver this year, I think he's about 45 points up. He wins consecutives and he's up there with George Russell and Charles Leclerc as winning F3 and F2. And Mark Webber, who's his manager, is talking about possibly the final vacant seat at Alfa Romeo, or does he stay at Alpine and be the understudy to Alonso? Who knows?
And we've also got Jack Doohan coming through as well.
Wouldn't that be fantastic for Mick, you know? Five-time world champion in the 500cc era before MotoGP came along, and, you know, Mick's there every step of the way with Jack, and gee, it'd be great to see him continue. But we're really excited for the, you know, the 7th to 10th of April, I can tell you that, Matt.
Well, you got there. Congratulations. Well done. Thanks for your time this morning, Andrew Westacott, the CEO of the Australian Grand Prix Corporation. So that makes it 173 days to go until race day for the Australian Grand Prix. And that's kind of interesting too. I was commentating for 10 back in 2019. I was scheduled to commentate too on that fateful day in 2020. So my last memory of 2019 was, or my first memory really, was remember off the start line with so much of the hype around Dan Ricciardo, and he went across to the right-hand side of the circuit just as they come towards the end of pit lane, just off the start, and he hit that bit of concrete tarmac on the grass. He tried to go around the outside and got onto the grass and then found a little bit of a strip of concrete. The actual strip is there for the teams to be able to walk up to the end of pit lane and take their equipment across the grass and out onto the track proper for when they're lining up. So there was about a maybe an 8 foot wide or square even strip of concrete that Danny Rick went across, and it sent his Renault flying and effectively ruined his race from start straight away. And it was just an extraordinary thing. I remember being in the commentary box with Mark Webber at the time and just looking there. It happened right in front of us and I could not believe it, more so to the point that I couldn't believe that Daniel didn't know that that was there. These drivers walk the track all the time. This is his home track essentially, and either he'd forgotten that it was there or he decided to take the gamble anyway. The following year, we actually did a story with Michael Massey, who is now the race director and was meant to be when that event was cancelled. We actually went and did a story there and walked back out to that grass strip. They'd taken the concrete out. So they'd done it, but it was a little bit late for Daniel Ricciardo. So there's some extraordinary times. A major event back in 1958 happened in the world of motorsport too, and it also had quite a weird story and a tragic ending afterwards. I'll tell you about that a little bit later on. We're getting plenty of texts coming through. Chris Coe from Willoughby says, will the supercars be at the Australian Grand Prix? Look, I don't know what their schedule is for next year, Chris Coe, and they're still trying to work out this year, but I'll give you a short answer, and that will be yes.